6 جلسه بنده داشتم. پنجشنبه رابای دکتر مندل کسینوس هم صحبت کردن و امشب دکتر ادریان فینکلستین با ما هستن. در آغازش گفتیم که تو گمارا نوشته که و تا شد خوشخ و یهی لیلا، تو گمارا میگه این دنیا، دنیا که ما توش زندگی میکنیم، به لیلا، به شب تشبیه شده و تو شب خیلی چیزا رو نمیشه دید، خیلی از واقعیت ها که وجود داره ولی شب تو تاریکی نمیشه دیدش. و همینطورم این سری کلاس ها هدفش این بود که نشون بدیم که این دنیا فقط به چیزایی که میبینیم نمیشه اکتفا کرد. There is much more to life than what the eyes meet. و ما سعی کردیم از دیدگاه قبلا تا حدودی به صورت فشرده راجع به این مباحث صحبت بکنیم. امشب در خاتمه این سلسله جلسات We are privileged to have with us Dr. Adrian Finkelstein. The lecture tonight is going to be in English and it's not going to be translated. امشب انگلیسیه و وقت ترجمه هم نداریم، چون ایشون گفتنی زیاد دارن، از ترجمه معذور هستیم. And Dr. Finkelstein was, I think, born in Israel. And he had, you know, schooling in Israel and outside Israel. He's a psychiatrist, an acclaimed psychiatrist, and he's a published author. And one of his books deals with regression. که regression همون موضوعی که ما راجع به گیلگور صحبت میکردیم، از یک دیدگاه علمی ایشون راجع بهش صحبت میکنن. البته ایشون اطلاعاتی هم راجع به کابالا دارن، ولی صحبت امشب ایشون به هیچ وجهی به کابالا ربطی نداره. این هدف این بود که از یک دیدگاه کاملا علمی راجع به این موضوع صحبت بشه. و لازمه که بنده اینجا تذکر بدم که بنده با چند نفر صحبت کردم، از جمله ربای کسین که ایشون هم روانشناس هستن، و گفتن که این اکسپریمنت هایی که میشه خیلی هاش معلوم نیست که جدن اون کسی که هیپنوتایزش میکنن و به اصطلاح برش میگردونن به زندگی قبلیش تا چند اندازه تخیلات باشه و تا چند اندازه واقعیت. بعدا باشون صحبت میکردم، خودشون هم واقف هستن به این امر که ممکن خیلی از کسایی که به اصطلاح ریگرشنش میکنن، صحبت که میکنن، یک نوع توهم و خیالات باشه، ولی خب البته ایشون اون اکسپرتیزش رو دارن که بتونن تفکیک بکنن که کدومش به اصطلاح حقیقی است، واقعی است، و کدومش شاید تخیلات شخص باشه که اینا به اصطلاح تو خودش همچین باور یا پرورش داده باشه که جدن تو زندگی های قبلی به چه طریقی بوده. ایشون ریسرچ هایی دارن که خواهیم دید که قشنگ مثلا بعضی از این کیس ها رو که باشون صحبت کردن آدرس داده فلان از امیدم 100-150 سال پیش و رفتن تو تمام اطلاعاتی که به صدا توی این حالت ریگرشن کسب کردن و وریفای کردن. حالا خودشون بیشتر راجع به موضوع صحبت میکنن، ولی بنده وظیفه میدونم که خدمتتون عرض بکنم که صحبتی که ایشون میکنن، البته بنده هیچ سه گذاشتن روشون لازم نداره و نیست، بنده هیچ اینو ایشون، من فقط فکر کردم که از نظر فکر کنم کنجکاوی جالب باشه که کاملا از یک دیدگاهی که به قبلا ربطی نداره، از یک دیدگاه علمی به این مبحث نگاه بکنیم که آیا از اون دیدگاه هم این موضوع گیلگول و موضوع رینکارنیشن تا چند اندازه وریفای شده. البته این سابجکتی که الان خیلی پاپولار هست و مرتب سمینارهای مختلف جاهای مختلف راجع به این موضوع بین غیر اسرائیل ها و دو مرتبه از دیدگاه کاملا سکولار راجع به این موضوع صحبت میکنن، ولی مطمئنا واسه همه جالب خواهد بود. بنده بیش از این وقت رو نمیگیرم، فقط چون درخواست های زیادی شده بود که این کلاس ها رو ادامه بدیم و باروخ هاشم خیلی از دوستان سخاوتمندانه کانتریبیوت کردن که بتونیم صرفا کاور بکنیم کست این کلاس ها را. ما تا این به جز این جلسه با روخشم تمام اینو کمک شده بود کاور کرده جلسه‌ای که قبلا داشتیم و به عزت شما امیدواریم که بعد از مود سوکا، یعنی الان یه خورد یک اینترسشن داریم، دو هفته دیگه مثل امروز، مثل امشب روش هشانه است. So we're gonna have a break. تا به عزت شما اینو stay tuned. بعد از مود سوکا بلینیدر ما یک سری جدید از این کلاس ها خواهیم داشت که یک مقدار تیمش Space Technology in Daily Life خواهد بود، یعنی که از اون اطلاعاتی که از قبلا کسب میکنیم تا به چه طرقی میشه تو زندگی روزمره برای زندگی بهتری داشتن ازش استفاده بکنیم که بیس خواهد بود کتاب مسیحیت شریف. بیش از این من وقت رو نمیگیرم. I'm honored to introduce to you Dr. Adrian Finkelstein, and he also gets a Mazal Tov. You know, just yesterday he became a grandfather for the second time, right? His daughter that I had the privilege to say, to be there, to officiate at their ceremony, I married them. His daughter gave birth to their second grandson. Mazal Tov.
Always have this initial difficulty to concentrate a lot of material in a very short time and to do justice to it. And this reminds me the story was I think Rabbi Zagari would tell you more. More accurately, the story. It's a story from the Bible. The student asked Rabbi Hillel how he would talk about the Bible and say it in one sentence or something like that, right? While standing on one foot, right? Okay. And I think that Rabbi Hillel said, love thy neighbor as yourself, and the rest is a repetition of the same thing. So, basically, I'm a physician, and I've been a physician for the last 26 years. But I started doing hypnosis as a subspecialty before I became a physician in Jerusalem, where I graduated at Hadassah Medical School, Hebrew University. It was in my last year of medicine that I took an elective in hypnosis because I was very impressed with a case of bronchial asthma that was cured through hypnosis when nothing else could help. So mind over matter was the answer. So I asked the psychologist that did the hypnosis to teach me. So I took an elective, and that was 28 years ago. Since then I've been practicing along with medicine and psychiatry. I've been a psychiatrist for 22 years. I've been practicing medical hypnosis. About at a time when I graduated from psychiatry 22 years ago, I was extremely interested in mind over matter, how people can get well by the way they think, the way they feel. And I did a work with dreams to find out how people that get heart attacks dream prior to their heart attack, if they have any dreams. And amazingly so, I found out that the ones that remember the dreams, and they were a minority among almost 100 people that I reviewed, they told me that during the night that preceded the heart attack. And by the way, the heart attack occurred usually during the night. They had a traumatic dream, like of a crash of a plane or a car, and it was so typical. And now we want to find out what comes first, the dream or the heart attack. And this was clarified because when the eyes movement that shows the time when people dream, it's a very rapid eye movement, call it REM activity, that preceded the changes in the heart reflected in the EKG, the changes of the heart attack. So in other words, that which is an objective measurement, scientific measurement, proved that it's true that dreams precede a psychosomatic illness. But I will not dwell too much in this. I just started with this because it's important to see where it led me. Now, I presented this paper in Winnipeg at the 20th convention of the Canadian Psychiatric Association, was well received, and the following year I presented it at the Menninger School of Psychiatry in Topeka, Kansas, where I graduated, and it was awarded with a national award and was the award from the school, not because, I mean, to my credit, now I understand very well that just God has his ways of working things out, and all the credit goes to him. But anyway, it was something practical in it, because if we know that dreams can do such a thing, then let's see how we can maneuver them, manipulate them to be positive rather than traumatic. Because most people don't do that. They just go to sleep and let it happen. And it may be that these dreams are like unguided projectiles in some cases. I don't mean to scare anyone. Usually you can dream without directing your dreams. Nothing happens. But I'm talking about sick people or people that are old, that have an illness. And anyone, preventively, would be a good idea before going to sleep to say a prayer, a bracha, and thank God, and go into your... dream, step into your dream, and then when you wake up in the morning, as we all do, we say, right, Modeh ani lefanecha, right? So, but anyway, from this, it's only one step to what dying is. I always was intrigued by life and dying. Life and death. Maybe I'm a Scorpio, that's why. But I was very intrigued about it. And dreaming is a rehearsal of dying. And like with dreaming, people don't think about that. As a matter of fact, they don't like to think about dying. Let's live, be lively, enjoy life, and it's fine. I agree with that. But a lot of people, when they come at the time of death, they are taken by surprise, because they did not guide their dying to have a very easy dying. Like they say, I know the old folks say, not to fall to bed, right? So and so on. But this can be arranged, prearranged to prayer. Now, it happened about 16 years ago that all of a sudden I was just waking up in the morning and I was in a state of twilight. Like I wasn't asleep, I wasn't awake. You know, it's like a state of daze. All of a sudden I could see like a globe, very brilliant globe, orange in color. And thought it's a dream, but it wasn't a dream, I was in the middle. And then I could see myself. I could see myself, and I was like a healer and taking care of sick people. And I could see my father. He was a carpenter, and I felt a lot of love for him. He was just doing some work in the, but it was so vivid, so clear. It wasn't a fantasy. It was for real, and there's no way that this can be explained unless somebody experiences it. They say sometimes, for those who believe, no explanation is necessary. For those who don't believe, no explanation is possible. So, in any case, that's what I experienced. And immediately it flashed in my mind that this is not this life. It's not me, it's somebody else. And I started researching, and I found out from my own experience, I even didn't know about Kabbalah at the time. I had a patient, a 22-year-old girl, very beautiful, with blue eyes, blonde. She wasn't Jewish, was a Gentile, but very nice person, very nice. But she suffered always of these blues, and she would get depressed, and she would be so depressed at one time that she would want to take her life. So she was in and out of hospitals because of attempts, suicide. She had very cold parents, very ununderstanding parents. She felt like a stranger in her home. She felt she has nobody. She didn't know about God. And one day, I told her, you know what? I may want to do a research into so-called past life regression. Do you want to volunteer? So she volunteered. She was a very difficult subject. She would not enter a trance very easily. And I was very disappointed. It seems like it didn't work. But all of a sudden, when I expected the least, she entered a very deep trance, and she started telling me a story about her living in Cornwall, Orange County, New York, in 1811. And she was about 12 years old. She started describing to me the place in Cornwall, Hudson River. She would show emotion while explaining to me things. Then she could see her father taking her in a carriage to Midtown Manhattan, to a school for girls, and leaving her there. She was an intern there, and she would stay there for like 6 months at a time. Then the father would come back and take her home for a vacation. But she felt so lonely, without a family. The only person that she could trust was a teacher there by the name of Mrs. Pfeiffer. And she was confessing to her, and she was talking with her. But she didn't feel loved by her parents. And one day, when the father brought her back home, she was so depressed that, and this was in, as I said, in 1811. I'm sorry? The year when I did the research was about 16 years ago. And we're talking here about year 1811. So in Orange County, New York, Cornwall, this is a town there. So apparently she was so depressed that she went to the window and jumped, and she killed herself. It was like the third story. She found out later on that she had another life in Blarney Island, where she also committed suicide because she didn't feel loved by the family. In that case, she was locked by the family in a small restricted place, and she hit her head to the walls until she died. She got really crazy. But in any case, in this life, she learned the lesson that killing herself doesn't solve the problem. Because she came back into the same kind of environment, more or less, the same type of parents. And for the first time, she had a very deep emotional insight that doesn't pay off. So since then, and this is the practical implication, she hasn't attempted any longer to do away with herself, to kill herself. This is my first case. I went with a genealogist to the library of Winnetka in Illinois to research the case, because this girl gave me her name, that was Lisa Arthur, gave me the name of her grandfather, that was Arthur, Samuel Arthur, the name of the father, John Arthur. She gave me the genders and the ages of all the children in the family and other persons in the family, not just children. And when I researched the census of the population in 1810, every 10 years they would do a census there in Orange County, New York, what I found, together with this genealogist that instructed me how to go about these things, I found out that there was an Arthur there, and it was Samuel, the only Samuel Arthur there. As we spotted it, then we want to see if the genders and the ages are correct. And at that time, they would just list the name of the head of the family, and that was the grandfather, Samuel Arthur. But the other people in the family, sisters, brothers, her father, the mother, they appeared under the gender and the age. And all of them, including her own gender and age, fit. I cannot describe what I felt at that time, but I allowed myself to be overly enthused. And I jumped through the ceiling, and what a discovery. What is this? I didn't know about Kabbalah, but really impressed me very deeply. And I decided that from now on I'm going to find out about this past life situation. And I gave announcements in different public places that I do research on past lives for free. And I did about 700 regressions from the volunteers that came to my office. That was in my spare time, that I didn't have much, believe me. As a physician, I had to work too. And I had a family that we heard about. So I had to thank my wife for forgiving me. By the way, my wife is Persian, so she's a good person, so she forgave me. Anyway, we've been together for 30 years. So I think a very significant case that came to my attention was of an eight-year-old girl. She came in with her mother, both Jewish, and They volunteered for my research project. Now the daughter didn't need even hypnosis in a very deep state, but she just relaxed, as children usually can do. She relaxed and I asked her if she lived before. She says, yeah. What's your name? Paula. What's your family name? Liborio. And where do you live? In Tala. I said, what is Tala? Tala? Well, what country is that? I says Mexico. Mexico. Well, then I asked her, what do you do yourself? And she said, well, I'm in charro. I said, what is charro? She said, well, I'm charro. It's with horses, she said. What is that? Well, eventually I found out it's a horse race that took place in that part of the world in the last century in Guadalajara region in Mexico. And it was a horse race for women. And it was called charro. To make a long story short, she really brought to me so many details, including her birth date. It was January 30th, 1862. And she was born in Tala. She described to me the church. She was Catholic, by the way, at that time, which is interesting anyway. At that time, I didn't know Kabbalah in order to direct my thoughts differently. But anyway, she was Catholic, and I don't understand that. But I went with Parvane, my wife, to Tala, Mexico, to investigate the case. To give you another few details that this girl offered in her regression, was that she knew how to prepare tequila. And when I verified later on in a specialty book that she told me the truth, exactly how tequila was prepared, she told me how to play a certain game called Boca, which I found out it was brought from Italy to South America in the last century. It was called Bocce, but poor people, and she was poor at the time, they changed it and modified it to suit their pockets, so they would make a ball out of a piece of wood and push it with a stick. And whoever could push the ball into the other court would win, and the other would not let that happen, and so forth and so on. But anyway, that was another detail. And another detail she told me about was that dish that they ate called flange, custard dish. Eventually I asked the girl's mother if she's aware of any Mexican culture that was injected into this girl in this life, and she knows all these things. But to my surprise, nothing like that happened. They were Jewish. They had nothing to do with Mexico. And that was very surprising. When we arrived at Tala, Mexico, we met with the Presidente Municipal there. It's a very small town, non-touristic, about 30 miles west of Guadalajara. And the Presidente Municipal invited us, gave us to drink some ponche. It's a special drink there. We didn't want to get chicer, but we didn't want to offend him, so drank a little bit. And we didn't know what to tell him. I didn't know if to tell him. He will think I'm crazy if I'll tell him about past lives, and I'm coming there for that. So I said, well, I came here because we had some relative by the name of Paula Liborio, and we want to see if you have here in the cemetery her cross, or she's here. So we went there. Unfortunately, we didn't find it. We found only stone monuments that, withheld the times. But They were poor and they had probably an wooden cross that was destroyed in time. But anyway, we found in the only church in Tala, which Paula Liborio described very nicely, she said that it's flat on the top. By the way, it wasn't flat this time, it had sort of a very sharp end. But the Presidente Municipal showed us an old picture of the church when it didn't have that, and it was flat. And we found in the baptismal certificate, Paula Liborio, born to Agapito Liborio, January 30th, 1862, exactly as the girl told me. I copied this, I copied the birth certificate, and I put it in my first book that was published in 1985. Your Past Lives and the Healing Process, A Psychiatrist Looks at Reincarnation and Spiritual Healing. And I think I was at the time the only psychiatrist that I was the oddball to do such a thing, because others didn't dare to. Certainly there were others that did it that were no psychiatrists, but there were many other cases that since then I published, and I probably regressed up to now in all the 16 years more than 2,000 people, in each of them in one or more lives. Now, my conclusion in doing that was that there is such a thing as past lives. Now, the question is whether it's a fantasy or reality. And I think that Rabbi Zagari posed this question to me. Whenever a person goes into a very deep trance and experiences emotion, usually it appears it's for real. And then it can be verified through the name and birthdays and other very concrete factors. Most of the times we cannot verify these things, but we cannot deny them either just because we didn't verify them, because it's very hard to come by with documents of 200 years back and one individual that wasn't Napoleon or Cleopatra. So that's the problem that we encounter logistically speaking. But I'm not going to continue with this. I'm going to give you a very interesting story. A story of an individual that came to me, to my office, a tall, handsome, blonde, blue-eyed man that apparently was of German origin. And he came to me to find out why he's so angry with his father. He was so angry with his father, he felt at times that he's going to lose it and kill his father. He was an engineer, and he was a successful, very intelligent man, and he felt it's irrational how he feels towards his father. So he came to me for a past life regression. This time wasn't for free. But anyway, he was regressed to a past life. But before that, as he sat in my reclining chair, he apologized, said he wants to go to the men's room. And I said, okay, fine. He went, he appeared after a couple of minutes, whatever he took, and sat back there, and we started talking about past life regression. And again he said, you know, I don't know what's happening with me, but I feel like going to the washroom. I said, okay. So he took off again to the washroom. So I'm waiting for him. He comes back, sits down. I regress him. This time, I regress him to a past life when he was a Jew. At least he thought so, that he was persecuted because he was a Jew. But he wasn't a Jew, because his mother was a Gentile, a German woman, Gentile, Aryan. But his father was Jewish and a very known musician in that town in Germany. So, when the Second World War came, his mother, that knew about the situation, advised her son to stay at home. The son was 20 years old, not to go out because he will be in danger. And he said, well, but I know that I'm not Jewish because you are Gentile. So they're not going to kill me. Mother said, no, they're not going by that. They know your father. All the town knows your father. He's a renowned musician. So he couldn't stay at home. He went out and he was caught by these young Nazis and beaten very severely and put in a carriage pulled by horses together with other Jews. And he was like together with all these people, he felt like a sardine. He couldn't even breathe. And at that time he felt also like urinating, but he was ashamed. He couldn't urinate in that situation. So he wanted to urinate, but he could not. So to make a long story short, eventually he's sent to a death camp, but first into a train, these death trains you heard about, that would go around and around with a lot of people around and inside with horrible hygienic conditions, and they would eventually die there of different diseases or of lack of water, food. And and there he felt again like a sardine with all these people. Again, he had this problem urinating. It's amazing that his subconscious mind remembered first that even before the regression. And that was the explanation why he wanted to go to urinate. As a matter of fact, even in the middle of regression, he wanted to do that. And I stopped him. I told him that it'll be all right after that. But it's amazing how the subconscious mind remembers more somatic things, bodily things, something that has to do with emotions rather than exact names and dates. That's another difficulty logistically, that we cannot prove always that there was a past life. In any case, he got well after this. I haven't seen him. He didn't pay me, by the way. He didn't have the checkbook. So after 4 months, I checked with my secretary. I found out he didn't pay. So I gave him a call, asked what happened, and he said, you know, since we did that, he apologized that he forgot, and he will put the check in the mail. And and he was doing fine. He was very good friends now with his father, that he understood finally that he was angry with his father, that was a Jew in the past lives, because due to his father he was killed and he suffered so horribly. And that was irrational to apply this in the present life to his father. So he was cured. And he felt very good about it. He really sent a check. I thought he's just bluffing, but he did. So he did well. And it's interesting also that this time he made sure that he came and incarnated into people that have nothing Jewish in them. They're Germans. Okay. So that's a very interesting case. Now, I will give another case, and after that I will open the floor for discussions. This is a Jewish lady, a Jewish, very good-looking lady, that was in her early 30s and very successful in business. She came to me because she has an irrational fear that her husband is going to poison her. I regressed her into a past life, and it appeared that she used to live at the time of the pilgrims in this country about 200 years back, not more, more than that, 300 years back, and she really felt horrified of her husband. She described him to me as being very rough, ruggedy, with a cowboy hat, looking threatening. She described the place to me. There were some small huts there, and there was a place where they were supposed to take the water, like a water fountain, but was a pit there. And then she described to me that her husband is so angry because nobody is hiring him. He was a bad man, and he would get into fights with everyone, and he would not have enough food on the table for the family, and they had a baby, and he got mad at the baby, and he strangled the baby. He killed the baby. He was screaming, she was screaming while under the trance, and as if it's happening, so real. Don't do it, don't do it, and screaming and crying. And so eventually the regression ended. The second session, I asked her, well, I don't know what is the connection between your baby being killed and your being poisoned, and what is the connection with your present husband? And under the trance, she explained that her present husband is that husband that came back to work out unfinished business with her, and she with him. Okay. So, but in the past life, she didn't know. It was very difficult for her to tell me what happened, that she's afraid of the poisoning. And then eventually she pointed to the pit where the water was, but she said, we don't use that water because it's poisoned water, it's not good water. And eventually it took me a long time to have her talk. Like, she found it so difficult. She felt like emotional pain. Eventually she got close to that pit, and the husband came, and they had a fight, and he pushed her over, and she fell into that pit where the bad water was. She started swallowing that water. And she was screaming and shouting. I was afraid that she may harm herself, but she was a young, healthy lady, so I didn't feel that something will happen to her. It's a good idea to get it out of the system. So really, she said, I don't want to die. He's looking from up there, and I'm swallowing. I feel sick to my stomach, and she held her stomach, and she was screaming and crying. It took a long time until eventually I told her, well, now you can let go of the body, because you'll come back anyway, and you will be, Sue. Her name is not Sue, but let's say Sue. Eventually she gave up the body, but she could not let go. And after that, she told me that her present husband is such a good husband to her, loving and so attentive to her, and that's why she felt it's irrational. Now the mother got into the picture, and the mother says, well, this is a terrible man. How can you stay married with this man if he killed you in the past life? So the mother was very upset. So it's interesting, the mother referred the patient to me, I happen to know Brian Weiss. I don't know if anyone knows him, and he's referring some patients to me. I think that they knew about Brian Weiss, and Brian Weiss said, well, he's not practicing here, and to go to Dr. Adrian Finkelstein. So, in any case, she got well, because in the following weeks, she didn't feel that fear that her husband will poison her, and for the first time, she could eat and enjoy food without any problem. So this is a practical case that I wanted to share with you too. And there are many other cases. We don't have the time. As I said, I have to say everything on one foot. So if any questions, please feel free to ask me. Okay. I will probably answer first what you asked last. I think I don't do anything to influence anyone to experience a past life, because that would be unscientific and unethical. So what I would do, I would just let them spontaneously associate under hypnosis about a past life. I would indicate to them, however, that they would have to go back in time to another place, to another time, when the problem they have now originated the first time, right? Originated. So that's the only direction I give them. And then there are technicalities, how to make them visualize what they experience, how to make them let impressions flow freely in from all five senses, and to captivate that experience to the fullest of its intensity. But why they come to me? Because there are very few practitioners nowadays that do that, and you ask me why people remember or don't remember. Well, it depends very much on several factors. One priest, medical doctor, that I introduced this here in the United States with hypnosis. There was another psychiatrist, medical doctor before me, by the name of Ian Stevenson. He was the chairman of the Department of Psychiatry at Virginia School of Medicine, and in 1962 he published a book entitled 20 Cases Suggestive of Reincarnation. But he didn't do it through hypnosis. He went to different countries and talked with very small kids that told stories about another life. Midnight, even Abraham lost it. He lost his temper and said, "You stupid man, get out of my tent. You don't believe in God, get out." So he threw the man out. And then God appeared to Abraham and said, "Abraham, what did you do?" You see, what did you do? I kept this man for 70 years. I gave him food. I gave him to drink. I gave him to rest. And you, Abraham, and I knew that he doesn't believe in me. But you, Abraham, even one day you couldn't keep him. You threw him out. So anyway, then thank God he went after the man. He apologized to him, brought him back to the tent, and then the man was so puzzled. And then Abraham explained what happened. He said, "Oh," the man said, "this is the God that you were talking about? You're trying to explain?" He said, "Yeah, this is the God." And then the man said, "Oh, if this is the God, then I believe in this God." So so in any case, it's very close to, you're asking me how I got to that. I got to people that didn't necessarily believe in God, people that believed in God, or they weren't Jewish. maybe another God, I don't know. But that brought me closer to God. And then I started looking into talking with rabbis, because being Jewish, I thought, well, I should find my way in a Jewish way. So I started talking with rabbis, and they advised me about Kabbalah, and I started studying Kabbalah. That was about 9 or 10 years ago when I started, and it made sense to me more than anything else. And that's the way I got into the I get a telephone call from a lady, an Israeli lady, that happens to be a professor at one of the university in Midwest. She's a professor of psychology, a PhD. And she's calling me. It is Dr. Finkelstein. I said, yes. Who is there? And she says, well, my name is Rivka. Well, that's a fictive name. And, you know, you would be probably curious how I know you. I know you, but you don't know me. I said, okay, go ahead. So she said, you know, and all of a sudden her tone changed. I felt pain in her voice, and she was tearful. She said, you know, my daughter, 11-year-old, was killed 2 months ago in a car accident. She was hit by a car, and she died. Since then, I'm not myself. I feel sometimes life is not worthwhile living. I want to kill myself. And because I think I probably wasn't a good mother. I wasn't a good mother. And, well, do I have another? Okay. So what I did, I started crying. I couldn't go to my lectures, to give lectures and all this. I felt very depressed. One night, I was dreaming. Talk about dreams. I was dreaming, and my daughter came into my dream. And she pointed out a finger at a desk that was covered with books. I approached the desk, and I looked carefully. I could see that all these books appear to be like the same book, but different, I mean, many samples of the same book on that desk. I picked up one of them, and I wanted to look to see what's written on the cover, and I couldn't see anything. I was very disappointed. I was about to put the book down, but my daughter was showing with her finger to look at it. So I turned the book, and I looked at the spine of the book, and then on the right side of the spine, I could see only one word, and that was Finkelstein. The following day, she went to the university library, and she looked for a notary by the name of Finkelstein. She found about 30 of them. So she didn't know what to do. She was disappointed, herself a scientist. She didn't believe in these things, but she was like a force that she couldn't control pushed her to do something, to find out. So she looked at the list of the 30 Finkelsteins, and all of a sudden came an idea to her to go with the fingers, walking the fingers. And where they stopped? And they stopped at Adrian Finkelstein. After Adrian Finkelstein, she looked. So your past lives and the healing process, a psychiatrist looks at reincarnation and spiritual healing. So, that's coincidence. It cannot be. It's stupid. So she was about to leave the place, and all of a sudden she thought, well, let's see what other Finkelsteins wrote. She started looking at the titles, and she didn't find even one title that came close to life and death like mine. So she concluded probably she should read this book. But she couldn't find it because, unlike Brian Weiss, I didn't spread the book. I really kept it secret. And finally, through the interlibrary exchange, you found the book at the University of New York University in the library. So she read the book, and then she wanted to make an appointment to see me. So she came for 4 days to Los Angeles area. She took a motel room, and I accommodated her to see her every day because she lived far away. And I saw her every day, and as I see her the first time, she enters a trance, and we call her daughter to her. And the daughter came, and then at that point I felt like psychic. I felt like I see her. And I could see her, and I could hear her, and I could see what she's doing. I said, well, she's kissing you right now. And then all of a sudden she jumped, and she said, yeah, she's kissing me right this moment. I feel it on my cheek. So then she told her mom, I came here for you, not for me. The daughter died at age 11. I came here, and this daughter was such a whiz, you know, in school, such a good person, and such a very, very advanced soul. She was like a mother for the mother, really. So I came here for you, Mom. I love you. And, you know, you remember that in that past life, you were so possessive of me. We're husband and wife. Okay? You're so possessive of me. Well, this time I came, so maybe you will see not to be possessive anymore. That if you really love me, love is letting go. And really, she was so possessive, this woman, of her daughter. That was her main problem. She lived like in a symbiotic relationship with her. So eventually she learned that lesson. Several months after, I got a very beautiful letter from this professor, this lady, thanking me that she had the most uplifting experience in her life, and that she understood her lesson, that we're here, all of us, and we're coming to Kabbalah to learn to receive in order to share, not just to take for ourselves alone, selfishly, egotistically, and to possess. I'm sorry? I felt the presence at the time when she was under the trance, yeah. Because I'm myself in sort of a trance when I do these things. Yeah, I could hear clairaudience, clairvoyance, yeah. Right, right.
How long after she passed the
wings? Well, this happened about 2.5 months after that, yeah. So that's, and then she wrote me a letter. In the letter she wrote that she took a tape recorder because she read a book, The Dead Are Alive. I don't know if you heard about that book, but, and she wanted to record her daughter. So at that time when she was kissed in my office by her daughter, she had a tape recorder in the motel room that was recording. And when she came home to Midwest, she replayed it, this tape, because she forgot. She was so shocked about everything. But she replayed the tape, and it came up that in the first 37 minutes, there was no recording. She was about to give up again. In the last 8 minutes of the tape, it was a 45-minute tape, she heard distinct noises, sounds of kisses. So she replayed this to her husband, she replayed it to some friends, and didn't tell them to see what they say. And they said, without exception, these are sounds of kisses. So I don't know if I answered your question, but it was an interesting case that I experienced.
We would like to thank Dr. Finkelstein or Finkelstein?
Finkelstein.
Finkelstein. The last thing that Dr. Finkelstein told us about this little girl, I asked him, like, you know, how long was before that? He said 2.5 months. And we know that according to Kabbalah, the neshama after leaves this world, the first year is constantly with the relatives. And that's why we constantly say Hashkavah the whole first year. And then after the first year, it's coming back when it's the Yortzeit, when the year comes about. It was really most fascinating. I have a correction to make that I really, this weekend when we had Rabbi Kessin with us, prior to that I had spoken to Dr. Finkelstein about his experiences, and he said, like, you know, as you heard, that he himself did the regression on himself for 18 times. And he said that he knows of, like, you know, sometimes for hundreds of times there is going to be a Gilgul. And that seemed to me as a very clear contradiction to what the Shara Gilgulim brings, you know, the Maharchu, Hagaon Rabbi Chaim Vital, the Talmid of Arizal, he brings B'Shem Arizal that, you know, the Gilgul is only 3 times. So I discussed that with Rabbi Kessin. Rabbi Kessin told me that Shara Gilgulim is not really understood correctly. He said also that the Gilgul could happen many times. He said what the Maharchu says in Shara Gilgulim is if somebody was a real Rasha, very bad, almost like he didn't do anything good, such a person gets only 3 chances. He says even though the Shara Gilgulim doesn't say it explicitly, but that's, you know, from other sources, from Kitve Arizal, that's the way to understand it, that these 3 times is only for somebody that was really, really bad, that doesn't get more than 3 chances. But if, you know, there are a lot of shades between black and white, like, you know, if people that were, like, you know, less than almost dark in their life, they would get much more many chances to come here as a Gilgul or Ibur, other forms of reincarnation, to get a chance to bring about that tikkun that the Zohar HaKadosh talks about. Again, the purpose of this last gathering wasn't really, I don't think, you know, we know the Torah and Kabbalah do not need the scientific hallmark and approval to have their, you know, authenticity with us. But I think, you know, it was uplifting and enlightening to see that there is a scientific proof for these ideas that the Zohar HaKadosh explains about Gilgul, and as it must still, you know, repeat this, that believing in reincarnation is not one of the, you know, principles of the Jewish faith. The 13 principles that we have do not include Gilgul. A person could be a perfect Jew and would get Olam Haba even if he does not believe in the whole idea of Gilgul. I have said in the classes, I personally definitely believe in that, because the Zohar HaKadosh very clearly talks about this whole idea of Gilgul. Since I've known Dr. Finkelstein and his wife Parvana Khanum and the family for quite a few years now, and they are really, you know, it's somebody once told me that all doctors are they're ba'alei ga'ava, they think of themselves as big shots, and if anything, you know, Dr. Finkelstein is really the opposite. He's a very spiritual person. He always, you know, acknowledges, like, you know, whatever we accomplish, whatever we are, you know, it comes from above, from the Almighty. I hope B'ezrat Hashem in the future we would have, you know, other opportunities to have Dr. Finkelstein to come to talk for us, maybe about dreams next time. And as I said, we are taking a break with these classes till after Sukkot, and God willing, after Sukkot we are going to, you know, advertise that we would be resuming these classes in different format. And as I said, I hope we would be able to enjoy having Dr. Finkelstein again with us. Again, we thank you very much. And before we start Arvid, I would, you know, I really hate to harp on this, but again, you know, this is Torat Chaim is doing this as a service to the community. Just with what we want to do is this place, you know, costs money. I want to just, you know, for a minute, please, you know, if we would have two choices. One choice would be to hold these classes after Sukkot at Torat Chaim on La Cienega for free, or coming back to Olympic Collection and having some kind of hemate ali or entrance fee just to cover the costs. Who is for, you know, coming back to Olympic Collection and volunteering, you know, to cover the costs? Do you want to raise your hands? I just want to get a... Is that, you know, what about if it's going to be on La Cienega in Torat Chaim? A lot of people didn't raise their hands for either one. Okay? Fine. Okay, so Be'ezrat Hashem, we would be, you know, informing you when and where these classes would continue. There are some envelopes at the exit. We would appreciate if you could please, you know, as I said, except this last session, Baruch Hashem, your contributions did cover the rest of the sessions that we had. Thank you very much for coming and being with us. And I would like to wish for everybody Ktiva v'Chatima Tova for the holidays that are coming up. And all the best.